Nothing in this program should be considered investment advice. It is for educational purposes only. Please hit pause and read this disclaimer in full.
When nobody's interested, that's the time you're supposed to be buying. And when everybody's interested, that's the time you're supposed to be selling. So, and that day is coming probably in just a couple of years.
The following is the audio version of a video released at peakprosperity.com. Visit peakprosperity.com to watch the video and to find other insightful content such as articles, discussion forums, and exclusive subscriber-only content.
Hello, everyone. Chris Martinson here of Peak Prosperity, and I'm here with a good friend, Mike Maloney, and we're at Limitless Expo, which is Ken McElroy and Tarl Yarber's great conference they have here in Dallas 2025. Mike, so good to see you again.
It's great seeing you again. Was it the last time I came to your farm or your house? Before you acquired the farm. So that sort of dates it already.
Yeah.
It's been a while since we've seen each other.
Yeah, I want to talk about the farm. So we'll get right into that. Before we get to the farms?
Yeah. So we were going to talk about the economy and precious metals. And, what I see out there is that I think no matter what the Fed does, the precious metals at this point are going north. Well, what's your impression of the economy? And then what do you think the result will be on the action of precious metals?
Well, let me just start with a bias, right? I might be wrong, but I'm not confused. No matter what happens, the Fed's going to print. And I take that on good authority because my whole life, that's all they've ever done. Remember, we had this little crisis in 1998. They printed. It was chump change by today's standards, right? $5 billion or something fresh to the market. And then, there was a housing crisis. So they tripled their balance sheet from $800 billion to $2.4 trillion. And then somehow they doubled it from there, more or less, because of 2011, 13, 19. There were all these mini crises along the way. Print, print, print.
Right.
And then COVID. So they doubled it again from 4.5 to 9 trillion.
Yeah.
So here's my prediction. We're going to 15 to 20 trillion on whatever the next crisis is.
That's interesting because that's when I did a 2015 update to my first book. I actually put that in there. That when these, if anybody thinks that, so I was just on a panel with George Gammon, and I said to the entire audience, there's about 500 people in the room, anybody who thinks there will never be another crisis in your lifetime, raise your hand.
That's
not
Janet Yellen.
One hand went up. And then I said, anybody that thinks that there's a crisis always lurking just around the corner, it's just that we don't know when, raise your hand. Everybody raised their hand. With every crisis, the Fed has two hammers, interest rates and currency creation with base currency. And they've got two levers. And one is a ball peen hammer and the other one's a flathead hammer, but everything looks like a nail. And the thing about their actions, interest rates is trying to get the banks to create currency for them. And then base currency, the size of their balance sheet, is them directly creating currency. Yep. And but when they do that, it only inflates certain sectors, the stock market. When they lower interest rates, it inflates real estate. And so they try and get the economy going again, try and get you feeling good by causing something to go up in price. But what was the expense? Where did that purchasing power come from for it to go up in price? It was stolen from you by diluting the currency supply, right?
Yep, exactly. So good friend of mine, Tom, he finally, after years of talking with him, the whole gold thing pops in. And so he starts buying gold and that's all good. So he called me one day because he had this huge insight. He said he bought a house in Arizona and it had doubled in price from 2017 to now. And he said, but Chris, I just calculated it was 488 ounces of gold then, and it's 488 ounces of gold today. So nothing happened. I've got him thinking in gold terms now, right? It's not how much dollars you have. It's it's just ounces per whatever, right? And you've had that view for a long time, right?
Yeah, you know, you remember John Williams of Shadow Stats?
Of course, yeah.
Government Shadow Statistics, shadowstats.com. And John Williams has this Shadow Stats alternate inflation calculator. And people think, oh, he's just some sort of lunatic nut. No. These are the numbers. This is the math that the U.S. government used to calculate inflation from the end of World War II until 1982, before they started fiddling with it.
Monkey.
And yeah, monkey, right. And what's interesting is his latest little newsletter. He says the gold price is corroborating the original. He was an insurance actuary. And everything started calculating wrong after 1982, and he was trying to figure out why. And it was because they changed the way inflation was calculated.
Well, let me see if this is fair, then, because I first went irresponsibly long gold in 2001. It was $301.
Perfect timing.
$301.
I was 315.
Were you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I was just behind you.
So that's where I got in, right? And when you compound that to today, it's an 11-bagger, but it's about a 9.8% rate of return. I think that's the true rate of inflation over that time, not 3.5%. I think it's closer to 9.8%.
I think you are exactly right, and that's what John Williams was just saying in his latest update.
Yeah, so be like, oh, what an incredible investment. No, what I did was I preserved my purchasing power. Mm-hmm. So I worked hard, I saved, and I managed to lock that in. And that's all, that's what it is. That's not a get-rich-quick scheme. Oh, what could gold go to? I'm like, it's going to track inflation over the long term, I think.
Well, I do think that, as they create currency, they're warping the economy and pushing certain asset classes into bubbles compared. They're no longer in balance. And
the free
market overwhelms it, and they snap back into balance, and that's called a crisis. The crisis is always caused by the immorality of our monetary system in the Federal Reserve, people thinking that they can do central planning for the economy. I mean, how much proof do you need that central planning doesn't work?
Well, the Soviets almost got it right.
But as it's doing this warping, if gold is preserving your purchasing power and suddenly a bubble pops and that asset class becomes very cheap, but gold has preserved your purchasing power, the gold, like there will come a day where buying more real estate is going to cost him less in terms of gold. Gold will purchase more because right now, it seems to be balanced. It has prevented inflation, but that bubble hasn't popped yet. It's still out of warp with the out of whack with the rest of the economy.
Well, what I've learned, and this took me forever to figure out, is that because I'm a fundamental guy, so I add up fundamentals. That works for me. Markets don't work like that. They work mostly on narratives and fraud. Yeah. Right. So I consider the silver market to be fraudulent to the extent that it's dominated by paper. Right, meaning futures and options and things like that. So if there's a legitimate producer, say Coleco Mines or something, has silver as a byproduct, and there's a legitimate consumer, say a Chinese firm wants to make solar panels, that ought to set the price. That's not what set the price. What sets the price is the 900 contracts that are trading in between that purchase price. So the noise is the signal now. The noise is speculators who just do what they want.
Right.
Silver has been in a structural shortfall for 6 straight years, and this will make year 7, if I'm right,
When you add in exchange-traded products, you got to add another year or two to that. The demand of them taking metal off the market. But yes, you are absolutely right. Yeah.
So how do you find a commodity that's that valuable, that's that needed, that's consumed in industrial processes, lost at the molecular level into landfills in the ocean, that's just obviously depleting, and the price barely budges, really? I mean, I know it's closing in on, 36, 37 as we're speaking right now, but that's nowhere.
Right. Well, it should be up in triple digits, and it will be.
You think so? Triple digits?
One thing it requires, we were talking about gold counteracting inflation, that it was completely offsetting it, and that it's what you're seeing is the true rate of inflation revealed. And that's what John Williams believes, too. But the public has not come rushing in yet to protect their purchasing power. There will come a day where gold and silver do go into bubbles. And what happened in late 79, silver had lagged gold for the entire, it was from August 15th, 1971, mm-hmm. gold took off. Silver lagged, it did go up, but then from November, December, and the first 20 days of January, silver just blew the doors off of gold. And I believe that that same thing will happen. And it was once gold passed the $400 per ounce level in 79, that the character of how these things were traded changed. And when people were looking at it and going, oh, it was $35 an ounce just, you know, back in 1971, yep. Here it's 8 years later, and it's up at $400 an ounce. It's getting a little expensive. How much is the silver? Oh, yeah. Well, you can get, you know, 50 of those for one of these. Oh, well, give me the silver, you know?
Yeah.
It's when they change their preference that then silver goes into a super bubble. And I think the same thing is going to happen this time around. So it'll blow way past the, in my opinion, from studying the last great bull market in the metals, when the public gets really worried and they're seeking that safe haven. And right now, it's a very small percentage of the public that own gold. Most of the public has absolutely no exposure. Well, when they try to come rushing in, the only thing that can make up the difference, that's a lot of demand and very little supply. And as the price goes up, the people that own it want to hang on to it more. It's a Giffen good.
Yeah.
And so as they hang on to it and they don't fill that demand, the price has to go even higher.
Well, when you say very few people have it, we're talking Westerners, U.S., yeah. Europe.
Right.
Talk to me about China. It feels to me like the silver market's moving to Shanghai. We're about to lose control of this market, right? Every day I wake up and the Shanghai silver market's priced $1 or $2 higher per ounce for silver. And I don't know how that arbitrage persists, but different question. But it really feels like there's like 8,000 gold shops in this one little district in China. 8,000, you know?
Wow.
And they're swamped all the time. So demand from the East, it looks like our metal's still going to the East as far as I can tell.
It is. It's going from the West to the East, which saddens me because it really does look like we are headed toward some sort of monetary system that has a link to gold. And the more that heads from west to east will determine how wealthy we are as a nation in the end. They're going to end up a little bit wealthier.
Yep.
We're going to end up a little bit poorer. What I see too in current demand, you know, I'm a precious metals dealer, and I talk with other precious metals dealer, and it's not the West. We're seeing these price rises, and for some reason, it is not the Western public that is doing the buying, but the price is going up. It's central banks setting a floor under it with their purchases, and then all of the Chinese demand that you just spoke of. That is what's driving the price. You know, I just spoke here at Limitless. I spoke to the smallest audience that I have had in at least 19 years. There are 44 people in the audience.
Yes.
And here, Dana Samuelson, another gold dealer, and I are on this panel. So it's the only gold panel at this conference. And there were 44 people in it. It just wasn't something that the public is interested in yet. But boy, they will be when it's at 5. It's like, you know, I used to say, when somebody would say, well, you know, gold was $250, and not $250 when it bought it, but $300, $400 when I first started promoting it. And people would say, yeah, but I want to stay in the stock market right now for this. Gold's been going down for 20 years. And I'd think in my head, you look like a $5,000 guy. You're gonna wait. It's $300 an ounce now. You're gonna wait until it's $5,000, and then you're gonna buy.
Yeah. Well, I have you beat. I had 20 people, I think, in my talk about peak oil, which just got announced by the Energy Information Agency. It's the biggest news you could possibly imagine. They admitted it. U.S. is like, that's it. The shale oil's kaput. It's not. That's it. So it has the most enormous implications, right? And once you understand, mining takes 10% of the world's supply of petroleum. It's a very energy-intensive business.
Yes.
Once energy prices spike, everything as a derivative of that spikes. right? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, there's monetary inflation, which happens through too much printing, but the rest is just a supply-demand imbalance. That's coming. And I think the derivative of that is copper, zinc, silver. All these other things are going to be derivative, like, because they're all depleting anyway, right? Getting harder and harder to get out. But this is like the biggest, I guarantee you in 2 years, I'm going to pack that room, right? Nobody cares right now. I don't understand how, because it's a very logical, fundamental story to tell. Wow. But right now, they don't care.
Yeah, and that's what I'm finding with precious metals. And what's interesting...
Silent bull market and all that?
Huh?
Is it a silent bull market?
It is, because, you know, it's been, other than cryptos, precious metals have been the best performing asset class of the century. And even with cryptos, they've been the best performing asset class this year. And still, 44 people show up. How many people did you say?
I had like 20-something.
20-something. Unbelievable. So, and that... these are contraindicators. That when nobody's interested, that's the time you're supposed to be buying.
Yes.
And when everybody's interested, that's the time you're supposed to be selling. So, and that day is coming probably in just a couple of years.
Yeah. So besides the fundamental mismatch between supply and demand, which we've talked about for silver, it's also there for copper. It's also there for oil. It's just there. People seem to just be driven by the narrative. I have to tell you, Mike, I don't know who's running the show, but they have just destroyed interest in oil. It's dirty. Nobody wants it. We want the clean energy. Like, it's been a psychological operation as far as I can tell. So oil has been in a sustained 3-year bear market for price.
Uh-huh.
And the oil producers are just pulling up, you know, rigs left, right, and center, which you can see. So no rigs, no future production. Like, you can just see it coming. And still, the interest is almost negligible. And I think the same thing's true of silver. I don't get it. 6 years, 7 years now.
Yeah.
In a giant supply-demand mismatch.
Yeah, you've got the manipulation of all the paper, but it's on top of the fact that silver is largely a byproduct of mining copper, tin, lead, zinc, and gold. And but if there's an economic crisis, then and the economy slows down, there's less use for copper, tin, lead, zinc, and gold. They're not building as many homes. They don't need as much wire or copper pipe and so on. And so there's less silver coming to market. Just when everybody is rushing toward it as a safe haven, the demand, the supply falls as demand increases. So the manipulation will come to an end, and a lot of people that are on the short side are going to end up going up in flames.
The markets are a ticking time bomb. Volatility is spiking, trade wars have broken out, and most investors are sleepwalking into disaster. Many portfolio strategies perform poorly during times like these. At Peak Financial Investing, however, we don't gamble with your future. Our registered investment advisory connects you with battle-tested wealth managers who reject outdated models and embrace active management. Strategies proven to navigate chaos, and who aren't afraid to discuss things like the great taking, or maybe the importance of protecting your wealth with gold. Without the right approach and with the wrong advisor, you're risking, well, everything. Don't wait for the crash to act. Visit peakfinancialinvesting.com right now to schedule a free consultation and discuss your particular situation. Take control of your wealth before the markets take it from you. Again, that's peakfinancialinvesting.com, and I'm Dr. Chris Martinson, urging you to act now. I feel like, so with AI, just to depart a tiny bit, I've watched that, like, the ability to manipulate human perception has now gotten really powerful.
Yes.
And I've watched this play out for years and years, but it used to just be ham-fisted copywriters, and you could detect it really easy, right? Gold fails to achieve new high, right? Even though it's like right under where it used to be, right? Where it's like NVIDIA powering back towards like the towards new all-time high. Like it's just, I've watched it. It's just been Psych 101. They just piss on gold every chance they can in Barron's and CNBC, you know, negative adjectives and things like that. But now I feel like it's really powerful, the ability to manipulate people's perceptions.
Any reality they want.
Have you noticed that?
Right. I think Ron Paul was just saying we were now living in a post-truth world, And now after COVID, we're living in a post-reality world.
Post-reality world, exactly.
Right. And you can't really trust anything that you see anymore unless you're like in the room experiencing it. If you can touch it, feel it, and smell it at the same time you're hearing it, then it's probably true.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Well, so what I like to default to is just what's the truth as much as we know it, right? I know that we need resources. I know that they're getting harder to find because I'm an investor in them and I look at mines, I look at wells, right? Mm-hmm. It's just getting harder, not impossible, harder. I know that the Fed's going to print more. I'd be very surprised if they don't. But
their two hammers are they print more or they lower interest rates to get the banks to print more.
Yes.
Either way, it's more dollars that come into existence.
Yeah, and you remember, of course, that it was March 26, 2020, that they were officially removed all the reserve requirements in banks. So just so you know, there are no reserve requirements in banks.
And that includes vault cash. They don't have to have any cash in the vault.
Yes. Banks. No, they just print it out of thin air, right?
Yeah.
But the converse, people are starting to notice now, Mike, stuff that you talked about in Hidden Secrets of Money, and I did in the Crash Course to try and educate people. This is how banking works. It's a scam, right? But people are starting to figure that scam out now.
Yeah.
And one of the things, we're in a post-truth world, we're also in a post-trust world. And people have lost a lot of faith, right? COVID eliminated trust in CDC, FDA, doctors, hospitals, right? We have...
It's like somebody pulled back the curtain and you see all the fraud and lies. And it was also like... it was also like the deep state raised their hand and said, yes, we really do exist, and we killed Kennedy.
But justice, we're losing faith in justice system, right?
Yeah.
Epstein files, where are they, you know?
Exactly.
What happened in Butler on July 13th, right? So that's shredding. So it really feels like it's the fourth turning. It's exactly like Strauss and Howe said.
Yeah.
That it's crisis is the fourth turning. But it's one of its hallmarks is loss of faith in the primary institutions. I kind of feel like
I lost all my faith in them, that's for sure.
I sure did.
Yeah.
But I see more and more people doing that. There's some magic moment where I think you fall over the cliff of, like, things change, right? Like, they asked Hemingway, how'd you go broke? And he said, slowly, then all at once, you know?
Yeah.
I feel like we're slowly, but we're going to have that all at once moment of loss of trust. That's when paper currency turns to confetti. Right?
Yeah.
That last loss of trust.
Yeah. And so when it turns to confetti, prices go vertical on everything. And so it's really hard to, what you've got to look at is what is accelerating fastest, what is going up fastest, because it's gaining purchasing power over all the other things. So when you see gold suddenly shooting up, you sort of have to measure, you know, doing ratio charts is pretty important at that point. Being a nerd with an Excel spreadsheet and charts can be very revealing. You really need to know because people are going to be thinking, wow, my house is really going up. But if groceries and gasoline are going up faster than your house, you're actually in trouble. You need to make sure that you're staying ahead of groceries and gasoline with whatever your investments are.
So you mentioned something important. I just need to know. What's your exit strategy? When would you sell gold and silver? How would you know?
Well, I'm trying to let math, I'm trying to take emotion out of it and let math do that for me. So I've got 23 indicators that we're in the process of back testing. And I'm trying to use indicators plus confirming indicators. For instance, the Dow gold ratio has been an indicator that people have been using for a long time. And we know that if you look at the last bull market, the Dow gold ratio went to 1. There was a day where gold hit an intraday high of 873 and the Dow was at 873 points at the same time.
Yep.
So 1 ounce of gold was worth the same amount of the points on the Dow. They were equal. You take the Dow gold ratio, and at the same time, that is when the gold silver ratio did a spike to, it came from 50 down to 14. So it peaked on the same day. So it's basically a confirming indicator for the Dow gold. And I've got a whole bunch of them that we're back testing like that. And then we're trying to figure out the weightings But what I plan on doing is selling a certain percentage, say 20% of my holdings at certain ratios. And then if it keeps, if it doubles again, I've got 80% left that doubled, and I sell 20% of that, and 20% and 20%, and hopefully I can get around that peak. Anybody that says that they can nail the peak is lying, and if they do, it was a complete accident. It was luck. And do you agree with all that?
Well, I do, and I'm trying to flip myself out of having any dollar focus. So people are like, Chris, what could it go to in dollar terms? I don't really care.
Right.
Right? So gold goes to 40,000 an ounce, but land is 40 grand an acre. I don't care, right? Gold goes to 400 an ounce and land is 400 an acre. I don't really care, because what I'm really hoping for is that I know that the long-term historical, I know there's more people now and less land, so it's might that might be not a, the right thing, but 1 ounce of gold for an acre of good land. My personal metric, though, is I think that's going to go to 10 acres at some point or more. So let me tell you a quick story. Paul Kiker, who we have a close relationship with, his grandfather's uncle had an intuition in 1929 and went and took all of his savings out of the bank, $300. And the next day, all the banks just collapsed. So he had $300 under the floorboards, and land went from, in Georgia at that time, $1.20 an acre to 1 cent an acre. He bought 3,000 acres.
Wow.
Turned out he was the, like, set his family up for generations, because now they were producing, World War II came along short, you know, not long after, and they needed wood. And these were all, you know, loblolly pine plantations kind of wood. So he just set the whole family up by being good intuition, little luck, but made the right bold move there, right in the middle of that, you know. So yeah. I think that's coming again.
Well, he also, by doing that, he was working against, it's hard to work against fear. He was somebody that was able to do it by recognizing the value. And this is, by the way, is when gold was part, that was the monetary system. So he took that out, and the currency was stable because of gold, but prices fell because the velocity of currency practically stopped. And so, setting his family up for generations, that was quite a move. I did not know that story. Thank you. It's a great story.
Yeah, no, it can happen. So,
right. Take a look at the prices per acre that you're talking about. Yeah. And now you can see that measuring things in dollars is almost pointless at this point. How many the acres of land compared to what a bushel of wheat, a pound of copper, a ton of iron, an ounce of gold, a share of stock, that is actually much more important. All of these ratios that I'm talking about, as far as revealing where true value lies.
Yeah. So that's what it's just. I'm convinced there will come a time when I can take my precious metals and convert it into productive land, right? That could be farmland, forest land, could be, you know, if real estate people always need a place to live. But I'm convinced there will come a day when that ratio is going to go out of whack, overshoot, right? Because suddenly all these $5,000 an ounce people are going to come piling in. So I ran some numbers recently. Right now, the total available gold available for sale in the U.S., about $1.5 trillion. I'm not including the stuff at Fort Knox. That's whatever is or isn't there.
Right.
We don't know. Dude, where's my audit? Right?
Yeah, lack of resources was your meme. Why did they not do the audit? Lack of resources.
So then I asked the question, how much financial wealth does just the top 10% of families own? And they have $120 trillion of wealth. So then you ask the question, well, if they wanted to move 5% of that into gold, and I think that's an irresponsibly low number. I think everybody should have 10, 20%, pick a number, but five. Like I just said, let's be conservative. Well, that's $6 trillion that has to move into a $1.5 trillion market.
Yeah. Wow.
And not all of that's for sale, because I got tight hands, right? Diamond hands on that stuff. So the question is, what number of gold, where does gold have to move to if just the top 10% of families move just 5% into gold,
right,
as an asset allocation strategy? I don't know.
It's a much higher
number.
It's going to be astronomical. It is. We are living in very historic times right now, and you know, The on-again, off-again tariffs were constantly changing. It has...
Let's talk about
I know that.
That
I have had to put off purchases for my farm. Because I just, some of the purchases come from Poland, these mobile chicken coops that we're trying to buy.
I can't wait to hear about that. I want to hear more about that, but keep going with tariffs.
They're supposed to go from 1.4% to 30% on August 1st, but now there's this deal that supposedly is struck, but I don't think anything's signed yet with the EU, so 15%. But that raises my costs by 15% if that goes through. But we don't know if that's going to change tomorrow or not. So business has to just stop and get put on pause until businesses can't operate in an uncertain environment. They have to have something where they can predict what's going to happen tomorrow, next month, next year. And so I see that this perturbation that we're doing to the economy right now should show up in some sort of crisis, something that should happen 6 months, 9 months, a year later. I don't know when, but it has to flow into the economy. What's your thoughts on that?
Well, they've been forestalling the crisis over and over again, and they've handed the baton from the Fed over to the U.S. Treasury, right? And back. I mean, a lot of people, it gets a little wonky quick, but I look at it this way. So we deficit spend about $2 trillion a year in the United States.
And it's going up.
Over time, that's gone into $1.2 trillion annual run rate of interest payments. That's as if the Fed was printing $1.2 trillion and putting it into the market. It's money. It's money that comes into the market that has to go somewhere. Now, it might roll back into treasuries, but the point is it's keeping everything really liquefied. Business loans haven't been all that hot, but M2 is still, climbing, which is a broad measure of money. And so where's all that M2 coming from, right? Well,
they type it. I'm sorry.
Coming from somewhere, exactly, right? So I look at this as like super highly liquefied market. They're doing everything they can to keep it all printed and up in the air. And it's fake. It's just fake. I call it the kayfabe markets, right? This is just the wrestling term, right? It's just fake. The audience knows it's fake. The wrestlers know it's fake. Everybody knows it's fake. It's kayfabe, right? These are fake markets. And I've had more and more people get that, like average Joes, working people talk to me, talk with Paul, and they say, I don't trust this. Something's wrong here.
Yeah.
And it's just junk, right? Because now we have this market leadership where it's just seven companies that account for like almost all of the gains. And you have to persist that those companies are just going to keep doing that forever and keep making outsized returns forever, right? And there is no forever in this story. The competition comes along, turns out AI wasn't all that great or whatever the story ends up, and pop goes the weasel, right? So I think that what's going to happen next is there's going to be a pretty big market crash. We're not just at slightly elevated stretch territories. We are the most expensive equity markets in history by seven out of eight measures, right?
Right.
The Buffett indicator, price to sales, price earnings, however you look at it.
PE ratios is the only thing where it's not in the greatest bubble in history.
Yeah, that's the one. It's just a little, but it's close, right?
Right.
And this is going back to 29, like the most stretched ever. So if you follow...
Robert Shiller's data goes back to 1870, I think, or 1880. So,
Yeah, but we were on a hard money standard. I don't know what to make of that. So you put all that into the blender, and the chance of there being a very, very significant correction super high, right? And we know that what's going to happen, they're going to print into that because the numbers have to go up and to the right.
Yeah.
That's the whole story.
Yep.
Numbers must go up and right.
Yeah, not back and to the left.
No. Just how it is. So, but I'm starting to get my first signs, Mike, from people who are in the 150 to 200,000 household income bracket. They're starting to go, it's getting awkward.
You said they already realize that it's fake, that it's a Ponzi scheme, basically. And when they say, I better lock in my profits now, and some of them start to exit, but the whole thing starts to collapse.
It does. But when I say it's getting tight, I mean their property taxes, their insurance, auto and home and stuff like that, food, obviously. So much, much higher pressures on the household budget than are admitted to, right?
Yeah.
And Trump just came out the other day and said prices have come down more than they ever have. It's like, they've gone up a little bit more slowly.
Right.
They haven't gone back at all.
He doesn't. How many politicians actually understand economics? This is one of the biggest problems that we have as a society.
Thomas Massey. Yes. Rand Paul, maybe. Because yeah. His dad, I hope.
Right. And his dad is retired.
Gave him some insights, hopefully.
Yeah.
Yeah, a few. Yeah. I talked with Ron Johnson. He seemed to get it.
Yeah.
I'm running out of names.
I think you covered it. That's the list.
Yeah. They don't get it. But this is the point, is that I think we're going to go into a hyperinflationary episode here, right? Because slowly, then all at once. There's a lot of pressure on the dollar. We haven't exactly made a lot of friends around the world, you know? We have the big bully stick, and China's out there making friends. I'm not saying they're better people, but they have checkbook diplomacy. We have gunboat diplomacy. I know which strategy I would choose, you know?
I don't think it takes hyperinflation, though, to make gold go vertical. It just takes a big rush toward it. And because there are so few people that own gold right now. And if you look at the average, Rick Rule, I can't remember the numbers, that 8% of the population used to own a reasonable amount of gold, and now it's below 2. And so what does it take to get back to that 8 as far as demand? And I think that the crisis that is coming, like you just said, we've never been this far out of balance before. So to reestablish an equilibrium in the economy, what does that require as far as a correction? One of the things that I sort of proved in my book is that we are living, I think it's chapter 5, everything is in a bubble. We are in the bubble century. And every time the bubble tries to go back into equilibrium with the rest of the economy, the Fed rushes in to save us, and they pump everything back into a bubble. And you were talking about the number of hours worked to buy a share of the S&P, or one of the things that my researchers found was this real obscure data by a couple of economists in Europe, where they took 17 advanced economies, and they took this back to the early 1700s. It was the Buffett indicator for the world, going back into the 1700s. And it goes along at like 30, averaging about 30%, the markets being the value of about 30% of the economy. And then just suddenly it just goes haywire. And what is it at right now? The Buffett indicator for the U.S. is at 200 and something?
208 last I saw.
208. Why is the stock market, and mostly just these 7 stocks that you were talking about, worth more than double what the size of the U.S. economy is in a year? This is nuts. It is absolutely insane.
I mean, let's make it even more focused. I think this broad, I was like, I couldn't believe this.
This skips all of Main Street, all of the restaurants and dry cleaners and grocery stores. They're not in that.
Right. So NVIDIA, as of about 2 weeks ago, was worth $1 trillion more than the entirety of the German stock market.
Wow.
So one company is worth more than the productive output of a highly productive, industrious people, a nation of 80 million people?
Wow.
How's that possible?
In years gone by, it would have been impossible. It's just that we are living in a fantasy world right now. It's post-reality.
Post-reality. Yeah, post-truth, post-trust. It's crazy. So that's why I think everybody should get a little defensive, right? And just, play the game because you have to. But please remember to take your chips off the table, as much as possible. And I started out in real high hopes on Trump. And he's done some things I like and some things I just don't get, right?
Right.
I just don't understand, right? Is it the deep state influence? Is it Israel? I don't know. But he's doing some stuff that's mysterious to me.
I agree. And a betrayal of what voters voted for.
Mm-hmm.
This big bad boondoggle is what I call it. The one big bad boondoggle bill act. How can you...
Which saves nothing. Backloads it, so let that, let future people wrestle with that.
Deficit spending, more debt, a bigger national debt, sticking future generations with a bigger bill. And that this ultimately can't work out. It's just more borrowed time kicking the can down the road.
Yeah.
And so it's what every other politician has done.
Yeah.
Run on one platform and then completely ignore the promises that you made. I am disappointed. I hate to take any... I like teaching economics and letting people make up their own minds. So I typically try and stay away from politics and taking any particular stance. But yes, I'm confused by the actions, especially when it comes to tariffs.
We have to take an interest because of that, because of what you said before, which is that it's random. Trump might wake up on a Tuesday and the tariffs are going to be 35%. No, Wednesday it's 10% or whatever. You just can't make any plans, right?
Exactly.
And you shake that cart hard enough and the glasses all fall off, you know?
Yeah. My question is, where is Congress in all of this? A president isn't supposed to be able to, the Constitution lays out how the government is going to work. When you read the Constitution, a whole lot of it is really boring stuff about how the government is going to work.
Yeah.
And right now, the president is acting very much like a king or a dictator. And waking up in the morning and changing the way the global economy is going to work, according to some idea he had when he was waking up that morning, it's upsetting the apple cart, to say the least.
Right. So he started out by saying, we're going to save $1 trillion or $2 trillion, right? We're going to get, it sounded like fiscal restraint, which I voted for.
Yeah.
I love that idea.
So did I.
You live beyond your means for a while, tighten your belt, get through it. And then they switched it entirely, and Bessent came out and said, "Oh no, we're gonna grow GDP." I'm like, "Okay," and they mumble something about AI. So I'm looking at AI, and I'm looking at it as the single greatest disrupting deflationary force ever unleashed by humanity upon itself.
Right.
Microsoft just fired 700 junior lawyers because who needs them? You can grok up some briefs now, right?
Yeah.
5 years ago, learned to code, my son. Those people are all out of work right now. I know more coders looking for work than you can imagine. So NAFTA was Bill Clinton shafting the blue-collar workers, sending all the jobs from Detroit to Mexico. AI is going to shaft white-collar workers, and I think we're not ready for that. What do you think?
Oh, I think you're absolutely... it's going to open up doors, and there's going to be opportunities. And I do believe that when we get through this period, that we either have a very bright future or we're annihilated. It's like this binary, I think it's a bell curve of probabilities flipped upside down. We got the tail risks are the greatest probability. So if things work out, we've got an incredibly bright future, but there's a period of getting from here to there. And that period is going to be incredibly chaotic. And what you're going to see is that in the next 10 years, the world is going to change more than it changed in the last 10,000 years.
Great.
10 years. And it's going to have all of our heads spinning, trying to navigate this thing and figure it out. I certainly am. But
it could be good.
I do feel good sitting on a lot of gold and silver.
Yes. Yeah.
And then a few speculative things. I've got some crypto and so on. But having my farm, that is a big...
That's the big anchor. That feels good, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so tell us about your farm.
Okay, well, I've got 900 acres of heaven at the very top of Puerto Rico, where I can grow crops that are like Northern California crops. I can grow crops where my competition... Puerto Rico imports 85% of its food, and all of the produce comes when you pick up a package of broccoli. It's these pieces of rubber that say product of California. So a farmer in California picked it 2 weeks ago. It sat in a warehouse overnight. It went onto a train, spent 5 days going across the United States to a port. There's a Jones Act, the Jones Act, it's called, a law that was passed during World War I to strengthen our merchant marine navy. Merchant marine navy is private ships that they can nationalize in time of war. And so all the ships were supposed to be American-built, American-crewed, American-flagged, and leave from an American port to service any U.S. territory. And that would keep the private ships employed and keep them strong. And so there's only two companies basically that service Puerto Rico, and they don't really compete. And that means that this 85% of the imported food is some 10 to 40% higher. That gives me the if I can grow crops that other Puerto Rican farmers can't, and I can because I've got the largest high farm in Puerto Rico, and when you do a temperature, when you download temperature maps from NOAA, I picked this belt to go shopping in, and my farm is actually in the coolest area of all of Puerto Rico, and it's the largest high farm in Puerto Rico. So I can grow and compete against farmers in California that are exporting their products to Puerto Rico. In Puerto Rican stores, I'll be competing with this extra arbitrage. So what we're planning on doing is working with the local colleges, trying to figure out techniques. Right now, the cost of all the chemical inputs of chemical monoculture farming, which is the way, you know, when 1,000 acres of corn, just one crop, that encourages swarms of locusts to explode, stuff like that, and depletes the soil of certain specific minerals, and you know, one crop will put nitrogen into the soil, one crop will pull it out. Typically, you do one solid crop, and now you've got to do all these chemical inputs. The chemical inputs have gotten so high that it's actually very close to the cost of what is called sustainable regenerative organic permaculture. Permaculture sequesters atmospheric carbon dioxide instead of releasing it. Right now, modern agriculture is responsible for somewhere between 9 and 18% of all greenhouse gas emissions. It should be exactly the opposite. It should be sequestering carbon dioxide. But I'm in this situation where it might be that my farm is the only place on earth where this experiment, working with the local universities, the agricultural universities, to try and figure out techniques to bring the cost of permaculture farming down below that of chemical monoculture. And if we can accomplish that, we've just changed the world because everybody else will adopt it simply because it's more profitable. So it's a free market solution. It doesn't have to be mandated, but we don't have to rely on grants and donations and stuff that is like, you know, that's like building your house on sand if you're relying on something that can
farming's just like entrepreneurship on steroids, right? Because it's one long series of mistakes, but you better learn from them.
Yes, right. Yeah. I want to learn from all the mistakes that the experiments and the students can make and then go on some reliable data.
But this is fun.
I am not a farmer. Right. You weren't a farmer either.
Nope. Still not. I'm working on it.
Some farmers working and running this thing, and it should be a very successful thing because we've got this price arbitrage of all of our competition being 10 to 40% higher than they should be. And that means that I've got a very high chance of success, I believe. So,
well, fantastic.
And it exists with just this special set of... Plus, in Puerto Rico, if you're a farm and you get the proper... You've still got to jump through all these government hoops and get the proper permits and a bona fide farmer's certificate. And then you're exempt from property tax, municipal tax, sales tax, use tax, excise tax, and 90% of your income is tax exempt. On top of that, if you've got, I've got a full-time grant writer, we've already applied for $70.5 million worth of grants.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, we got rejected from a $50 million, so now it's down to $20.5 million.
That's the game.
And you only win a certain percentage of these grants.
Yep.
But you can reapply. And so we've got this. This is like something that is a full-time job for somebody jumping through government hoops, which shouldn't be necessary. I believe in free markets. But if all this stuff exists and there's other farmers out there that I'm competing against taking advantage of it, then I have to participate in this stuff. I've never taken a dime from the government before, not a penny. But I've paid millions, so now I'm going to get a bunch of that back.
Well, fantastic. Mike, we're going to have to wrap this up here because I see they're about to like start a happy hour. I wouldn't want to have to compete with the bar and all the noise that's about to descend on us here.
Yep. I want to thank you. This was awesome, and it was such
my
a pleasure.
My pleasure.
And you know what? I need to get you down to my farm. I need to come to visit your farm.
Let's do it.
We got to share a bunch of ideas.
All right. So, Mike, how can all my listeners follow you and find your work?
My YouTube channel. The best thing is just doing an internet search. I hate to say Google, because they're not the only search engine out there.
They're dead, actually.
Do an internet search for Mike Maloney. And for the YouTube channel, if you do Hidden Secrets of Money, that'll get you there. And then the farm is FFPR for Freedom Farms Puerto Rico. So FFPR.farm, not .com.
All right.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
It was great.